Hi, everybody. It's 10:30 on November 10th, 2 days after the election, to put it into some kind of positioning for you. I can't think of the right word. Okay, context. That was the word. Thank you. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening today. We appreciate it. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's our website. We put a new schedule up every Saturday, and we tweeted it out a couple of times already over at EduTalk Radio. If you want to be a good person and sleep well at night, follow us over there at EduTalk Radio. We have a nice ASCD show this morning with Dan Rothstein and Luz Santana. Luz, I hope I pronounced them correctly. Okay, who wrote a new ASCD book called Partnering with Parents to Ask the Right Questions, a Powerful Strategy for Strengthening School-Family Partnerships. Dan and Luz are the co-directors and founders of the Right Question Institute, thank you, in what's commonly known around here in New England as the People's Republic of Cambridge. I hope you're laughing. Okay, at Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard is. Okay, long-standing joke. Dan tweets at Rothstein Dan, Luz at Luz Santana 2-0, and it's partnering with parents from the Right Question Institute. And thank you, Ross, over at ASCD for helping me set up the show. And without further ado, I can't talk today. Okay, here's Dan and Luz. Hi, Dan. It's Larry.
Hey, Larry. How are you? Good to talk with you again.
It's a pleasure
morning,
to have you
Larry.
Here. Hello, Luz. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for having us.
That's my pleasure. You know, with a Z and you have a Hispanic name, is it Luth or Luz? I learned
it's
Castilian. Luz. Say it again.
It's Luz.
Luz. Right?
Yes.
Luz. Thank you, dear. I appreciate that. Okay. You're from the Right Question Institute. And, you know, I set the show up with my good pals at ASCD. But why don't you tell us what the Right Question Institute is? Dan, do you want to do that or switch it over to Luz? It's up to you.
Luz is the primary person on this one. I'm here to kind of just support.
And you're doing a whale of a job, I have to tell you. Okay. So, Luz, go ahead.
We are a nonprofit organization that has an educational strategy that is applied to many issues and is also applied in many settings. And we have been around since 1991.
Wow. It's a long time now. We're getting old.
Yes.
I'm getting old anyway. Okay. And so, but when you call it the Right Question Institute, why do you call it that? I'm just curious.
Well, one of our main strategies is or processes is to help people learn how to ask the right questions. And we have developed a methodology for that.
Okay, and is it all education, or do you do it in other areas as well?
No. Well, the strategy is applied in healthcare to activate patients.
Great.
It is used in social services to help people navigate the social services system and advocate for themselves. It's used in the area of innovation for problem solving. And it is also used in the classroom to promote student engagement, curiosity, and ownership, and that's among other issues.
Cool. That's good. That's a good thing. And we're focusing, obviously, on education today here on Education Talk Radio. Okay. So go now into school-family partnerships. And by the way, I tweeted this to my good friends over at NSPRA, the National School Public Relations Association, because that's their whole goal, is to get parents and the community involved in schools. All right. And I think that's really, really important. So what are you doing, okay, to strengthen school-family partnerships? What was the specific need that attracted you to it, and then what's the strategy?
Well, we have been working in this area of developing school-family partnerships for many years, and it was in that area that we began back in 1990. Dan and I were working in a dropout prevention program with low-income and immigrant families, and As we work with the families, we heard very often that they were not going to the schools because they didn't even know what questions to ask. And we noticed that that was an obstacle to their participation. So to solve the problem, we gave them a list of questions to ask. And when we did that, rather than helping, we created dependency on us. And every time that they had a meeting, they had a problem, they used to come back and say, what questions should we ask? So therefore, we figured out that the need was not to give them the questions, but to develop the skills so they could ask questions in all settings and situations. We also learned that they were more effective when they were able to identify decisions and ask questions about decisions. And that's why we, right now, what we offer is the tools and strategies, methods, to develop those two skills, the ability to ask better questions and the ability to participate effectively in decisions.
Mm-hmm. It's good. And Wingman Dan Rothstein, co-author.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to add to that, sir, at all?
Right. Well, it's interesting because when Luce and I, with our other co-author, Agnes Bain, who's worked with us on the development of the strategy for many years, when we began to look at this, what we realized is what we were learning from parents was something very significant that had been overlooked. They had named this obstacle of not knowing what to ask. And it seems It seems kind of simple. Some people may say it even may be simplistic. But it actually turns out to be a profoundly important and significant ability to be able to ask your own questions. We have a board member of the Right Question Institute, Steve Quattrone, who talks about how our question formulation technique is a way to organize your thinking around things you don't know anything about or you're not an expert on. And all of us have been in that situation. If we're in a doctor's office, if, you know, we're dealing with, you know, the legal system, if we're dealing with kind of a mortgage process, we've all been in situations where we may say, I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know what to ask. So in a sense, it's the parents who named this profoundly important problem. And I think that what we've been learning ever since they kind of set us on this journey is that learning this skill opens doors. It creates the pathway to a partnership with schools. Schools are hungry for parents to partner with them. And schools have had negative experiences with a few parents who they feel have been very, very difficult or very that they don't know quite how to work with them or have been creating some tensions in that relationship. But they're concerned about the vast majority of parents, particularly in low-income communities where the parents are not participating. And this becomes a strategy for how do you start to build that partnership. And that's what we're trying to do, is trying to make this a resource so that teachers can use it with individual parents, assistant principals can use it at an open house, a principal can use it at an open house with groups of parents. And so a parent liaison could use it to help a parent who's about to go through the individualized education plan meeting
IEP.
And to look at that process.
It really is, but I have a question, and Dan, you can start it, then you go, or you can switch it to Luz or swing it over to her when you're done. There's that new thing of not new anymore, but the helicopter parents, where they're just involved in everything, and they're constantly, I'll use the word nagging, but their intentions are good.
Right.
Every single official on behalf of their kid, and they probably ask too many questions, to be perfectly honest, but that's okay. All right.
Yep.
And I'm curious, in this day and age, okay, who are we talking about? Who are those people who need to understand to ask the right question? All right. And Dan, Dan, you start or swing it over to Luz.
Yeah. All right. I'll start on that. I think it's a really important question. One thing that we've learned from
that's why they pay
working...
you the big bucks, Dad. That's why
there
they pay
you
the
go.
Big bucks.
That's
yeah,
right.
There
you asked the right. Yeah. You asked the right questions. Yeah. They don't pay us
Thank
big
you.
Bucks, Larry, for asking the right questions. But I'm glad to hear
that
you're getting
paid
the
me.
Big bucks.
That's supposed to be paying
right,
it to
right.
me. And that's
glad
the way it should
that.
Be.
There we go. So I think that part of what we've learned is that for people who have high expectations that an institution is supposed to work for them. And this sense of confidence and perhaps even, you know, this assertion that I have a right to ask a lot of questions, that our process, our question formulation technique, has actually helped people become more strategic and more constructive in their relationships, because instead of coming in with a list of demands, they actually go through a process, and our process allows them to not only produce questions, but to actually learn how to improve their own questions and then prioritize. So we've had doctors, for example, talk to us about, I have some patients who come in and they want to co-doctor with me, and they've got reams and reams of information and questions, you know, and I need them to learn your process so they can prioritize, because we need to really focus sharply. So there are the parents who, you know, this is a strategy that's relevant for all parents and for educators working with parents who maybe are asking too many questions. But the truth is that's a very small number, and the focus of the Right Question Institute is primarily on working in low and moderate income communities and working on building capacity of people to participate more effectively in decisions that affect them. And so our interest is in really building the capacity of more parents who are not participating to be able to participate. And what we found is there seems to be something transformative about this process of learning to ask your own questions and focus on key decisions that allows people who have not participated to begin to have a voice and to begin to participate. And I think that we're all aware that we need more people in this country participating effectively.
Hear, hear. I won't argue. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. Okay, and by the way, I want to say it again. It's an ASCD book, Partnering with Parents to Ask the Right Questions, a Powerful Strategy for Strengthening School-Family Partnerships. And, Luz, let me ask you this. I know you want parents to read the book, but we're talking Education Talk Radio here. Talk to me about what the school needs to – obviously, we're aiming here today at school districts, administrators, teachers, whatever – And how do you want the book to affect them? Is the best way I can ask that. How do they initiate such things and get the strategy down to the parents?
Well, the schools already, or many schools are already implementing activities for parents. Other schools have programs to engage and work with families. So what we are providing is a resource that they can use to integrate into those programs. So they don't have to hire new staff or create a new infrastructure. They introduce our strategy as part of the services programs that they already have in place. Therefore, it's an integrated strategy. So right now, many of the activities are to create a welcoming environment for families, or it could be to have activities that will build some skills. But the kinds of skills that are being built are different from the two foundational skills that the Right Question strategy provides. So it encourages and provides a process for the parents to ask questions that they can use to communicate, to problem solve, provides a structure also for the parents to be able to participate in decisions. So therefore, what it does is that it enhances, improves the activities that they already have in place, and the parents become more satisfied, they get licensed to participate, and it is there that the partnership is built. So for the schools, it is not about doing the activities, but what they do when they are implementing them.
Yeah, I think what Luz just said, Larry, is so significant, because that model of offering schools a resource that the book Partnering with Parents to Ask the Right Questions offers allows schools to take it and say, I can read this today and I can use this tomorrow. This doesn't require a new infrastructure. It doesn't require a new program. It doesn't require new personnel. I can actually start doing this to build a partnership with families. And our whole idea, the whole intent in working with ASCD on this book was to provide a resource that would make life easier for schools and for educators, to make it easier to build those partnerships, not more complicated.
And well, Dan, since you're on, do you want? You're going to say all of the above, but I'm going to run down a list. There's school administrators, guidance counselors, teachers. Do you want them to read the book? Obviously, you do.
Yeah, but, right. The book. Yes. Right. The
My
book
point
is
today, book, who's going to initiate the strategy from the book
right,
in the school?
Right. Well, that's
the better
that's
way
a,
to say.
Right, there you go with the right questions, Larry. Okay, so that's the way the book is actually scaffolded, starting off with an individual teacher working with an individual parent. And this is a teacher who may be familiar with the question formulation technique, which you talked about with us in our previous book, Make Just One Change, Teach Students to Ask
yep.
Their Own Questions. So the teachers learn how to use the question formulation technique, and then they adapt it to working with a parent so the child is not doing homework. How can I kind of engage the parent in looking at how do we problem solve together? And she uses the question formulation technique with the parent, and the parent figures out problem solves with the teacher. It's really a partnership. And then you can bump it up in terms of different levels at the school. And so the case studies show how a school can look at a problem of bullying at the school, and how can they have used the question formulation technique and our framework for accountable decision making and our model for supporting the children's education, monitoring their progress, advocating for them as a way to engage in discussions with parents about how to build a community that diminishes the bullying that's going on. A district that wants to look at reducing disparities in achievement, they can use the book because there's a chapter in the book that shows how a district can begin to use it to make instructional changes and to get parent and community buy-in and build that relationship. So the folks you were talking about before who want to help schools build partnerships with families and communities, that kind of chapter is really a resource for them. So people are, and the way it's designed is that the book also has a set of resources that Luce has kind of masterfully put together that really help people take the chapter. This is what I learned in this chapter. Now here's a resource. Here are the resources I can use so I can implement tomorrow.
And let me take this one step further. You know, with the changing student body, a much more diverse student body across the country, and a lot of kids in ELL, is there any training going on that you guys know of, okay, in teacher education prep so this isn't really part of pedagogy, but help me out. Have you heard from any of the teacher training institutes on this? Just so the teachers and anybody going for their master's in education, guidance counselors, administrators, can be put on the right track in a changing and diverse society. That's what we're really talking about here, I think. I'm not sure, but I think.
Mm-hmm.
Dan or Luce?
Luce, do you want to address that?
Well, I'm not aware of anything being done about that. What I know is that teacher preparation programs are a perfect place to integrate our strategy. So the teachers believe with the strategy on how to work with families, including the ELL families. Very often part of the thinking is that you have to worry a lot about the language, the culture, but in
yeah,
our
the cultural
work,
thing is very different because a lot of cultures they're not trained, okay, to question authority,
right.
And they see the teacher as authority, all right, and they're
right.
scared to do that, right?
Right.
You know?
I think Larry, part of what we have found certainly with the question formulation technique and the adoption. There are now more than 200,000 educators around the world who are using it, who are tweeting about it, blogging about it, is that in some ways the field is ahead of the institutions that are providing teacher education. Because the field, through kind of peer-to-peer sharing, they are picking up on a resource that they value because it solves a problem they see in front of them, and they can adopt it easily. They don't have to go to 6 months of training and you know, pay a lot of money for it. It's free. It's available. There are resources online. There's resources through the book that's available. And so I think that what we're beginning to see is that actually there's some bubbling up into teacher education programs where teacher educators, the faculty, are beginning to hear from the people entering their programs as, you know, kind of in-service teachers they're learning about the QFT, the question formulation technique, from them. And that's what we really hope to see happen. And we also, you know, we've heard from...
No more acronyms, Dan. I'm passing. That's the first thing President Trump is going to do, pass a law against acronyms, the QFT.
Yes, the question formulation technique. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. You're right, absolutely right.
That's priority. Yeah, no more acronyms.
Absolutely right. Yeah, I apologize. Yes. So we just heard from a person in a district in California serving largely an ELL student population who got the book, whose superintendent got the book from ASCD, because ASCD sent it out as a member book to 60,000 members. We're beginning to hear from people who are passing it on. The superintendent passed it on to the person who's responsible for working on Title I and parent and with parents, and immediately they want to move into implementation. So that's really what we want to see. And there's a chapter in the book about working with, and talking about ELL, that's an acronym. I'm going to throw it back at you there, Larry, okay? English language learners.
Right, you're right. And this is good. By the way, what you just said is a good reason for schools to join ASCD, okay? Yes. ASCD.org. And because they're on top of the stuff. And by the way, I want to mention the Right Question Institute. Okay, is in Cambridge, Mass., but it doesn't matter where it is. It's rightquestion.org on the web. Okay, you can check out all of this, et cetera, over there. Luz, how does your strategy differ from other ones? I mean, you know, the people in education are pretty caring people. Usually, they care about the person they're talking to, including students. Well, what's the difference between what you're advocating and what's basically intrinsic, okay, amongst most educators?
For using our strategy, there is a shift in practice in which it moves from asking questions of the parent, for example, to providing a structure for the parent to ask questions, from just talking about decisions for providing a process for parents to identify decisions and ask questions about decisions. And it is also a different way of working, in which the time is used differently. So, for example, in a normal conversation, the teacher may ask questions of the parent and give a lot of information. So with our process, the initial work is for the parent to generate and prioritize questions, and then the conversation is guided by the questions that the parent asks.
Ah. Okay, so it's nice. It puts the onus on them. It takes a little bit of the fear away about what's going to be coming down the pike. It kind of changes the responsibility, which is great. And then there's a responsibility on the other end to answer it the same way. I got to ask, Luz, do people when you learned all about this, did you find that a lot of educators answered questions with a question, or were they actually giving information? Because that's what everybody really wants, is an information transfer. I mean, it's really an important technique, and I bet you lawyers learn it, okay, about how to ask questions. So just talk about, you know, what got you started, maybe, on what you saw that got you started on this, et cetera. I'm curious. It's cool.
Well, one of the things that we notice is that information changes all the time. Yeah. And having the skill of asking questions allows people to become information seekers, allows them to problem solve, allows them to get the information that they need. And they become more independent. They get that license to ask that they can use in many different settings. And in fact, part of what we learned when we started was that, you know, the parents, when they began to learn to ask their own questions, they use it in the healthcare setting, when they were looking for jobs, when they were problem solving in the community or at home.
Great.
So
wow.
It's a transferable skill that can be used in many to address many issues, situations, and can be used in many different settings.
And it's really interesting, Larry. Because
that was great. Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead,
yeah,
Dan.
It's interesting,
sorry.
Because in a sense, the parents name the problem, which you could see discussion about questions all over the place. And very often, the most sophisticated, highly educated people name it as a profoundly important skill. So the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman said, all learning begins with a question. College presidents were interviewed by the New York Times and said, what should students learn after 4 years of college? And Leon Botstein of Bard College said, there's so much knowledge information, the best we can do is help them learn to ask strategic questions.
Hear, hear.
So, right. So there's a recognition at the highest level that this is really important. So what Luce and I and Agnes and others who've been working on this for more than two decades has been looking, we've been looking at how do we democratize access to this profoundly important skill of question formulation. It's a skill that opens up learning, that allows people to become agents on their own behalf. It's a democratic skill. And so this is what we're really trying to do, and we're trying to democratize access. And we have some support from the John Templeton Foundation to actually get the question formulation technique into a million classrooms around the world by 2020. And that's
congratulations. I hope that happens.
Yeah. And that's what we're working on that, and with this new book from ASCD on partnering with parents to ask the right questions, we're determined to also make sure that lots of schools, they're teaching their students to ask questions in the classroom, and they're working with parents to be asking their own questions about their children's education.
That's great. So the Right Question Institute is far beyond just a parent-teacher meeting. It really is, involves a whole good way of thinking. And Dan, and then I'm going to ask Luz the same thing, but I'll ask Dan first so Luz can formulate her answer. What got you I don't mean on education, the Right Question Institute. What are you? What got you started on this? This is really very interesting. Dan?
Wow. So you have another half an hour, Larry?
Are you a psychologist? Are you a lawyer? Are you a teacher? Are you a bricklayer? Where did you get started on this? I love this.
Wow, that's really. You have another half an hour, Larry? Huh?
Yeah, well, you know, not quite, but you can go for it. Go ahead, leave some time for Luz.
I've had a lot of different experiences, and in fact, long before I thought about being an educator, I was a youth educator, youth organizer working in a low-income community, and I was learning a lot from the people with whom I was working. And I realized that they were able to name some issues that were not really being recognized in the academic world as challenges or important things to be addressed. And so I actually went to graduate school at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and had a chance to really work with some great people. I worked with Robert Coles there, who has really spent a career listening to people and writing about what he's learning from people from Appalachia to the Deep South to cities to around the world. And so I really had an opportunity to kind of start learning about how to listen and how to learn from people. And when I wound up working in Lawrence, Massachusetts as the director of neighborhood planning, which is where I met Luce and Agnes and other people, we had a grant from the Annie E. Casey Foundation to work on dropout prevention and to work primarily with parents. And so basically the key point for me was that work with Luce and Agnes and others on working with parents and what we were learning from parents. And that was in a sense my journey to this.
Right. And for those of you who don't know, Lawrence, Mass is a city, 30 miles north of Boston or so, close to the New Hampshire border. And it is an incredibly diverse city. It used to be the home of many textile mills and that sort of thing, and a lot of that industry has left, and it's not in the best of shape these days. I know they're trying. They're close to Lowell, Massachusetts, and all that. So I just wanted to put that into perspective for people, because we're talking nationwide, okay?
Right.
And that's Lawrence, Massachusetts. And Luz, how did you were obviously involved in Lawrence as well, but again, my point is to attack it from this angle is really interesting. Your right question. You must. What were you doing, and how did you figure this out? Which is really good.
Well, be aware that I still live in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and I think I bring it.
Did I give it? Did I make like I didn't like Lawrence? Did I insult you by any stretch?
No. I'm not saying that. No.
Okay, good.
But Lawrence is like the home of the revolution. We had the Bread and Roses strike. Our strategy was born in Lawrence as well. But I bring a different set of skills and experience to this work. So I'm a migrant. I migrated here from the Caribbean, and then I became a welfare recipient. And
wait a minute, Caribbean doesn't cut it. Where in the Caribbean? Where?
I'm from Puerto Rico.
Ah, Puerto Rico. Okay, good enough. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm from Puerto Rico. So I became a welfare recipient, and my social worker began to work with me in a different way, in a way that seemed awkward. And I got out of welfare, I got a job, and then I became a dislocated worker. I was laid off. And as I began to navigate this system again, it happened that if I didn't ask for specific information, I will not get what I needed. And
I
learned about the need to be able to advocate for yourself and ask questions. And then I had children in school. Also, and that was another issue, I had a child with an IEP. I needed to advocate. I needed to ask questions because otherwise, you know, I will not get the services. I will not be heard. So I think that that has informed quite a bit the work that I do. I work doing advocacy for people, and then I noticed that when they needed to make a telephone call because they were being evicted, if I told them, you know, ask for an interpreter and ask what you need, the transformation in people was just amazing. It was from do it for me, so I can do it. I can do it myself. So I think that I have brought a lot of my own experiences to this work in helping people generate their own questions
exactly.
And also helping people focus on the decisions that affect them.
Right. And I must ask you, I know, so one group you guys didn't mention, okay, which I think is an important group with this, and it's not education per se, but it's senior citizens who are older. Their minds may be a little bit slower, okay, but they're stuck in systems too. Are you working a lot with senior citizens? Because, boy, they need it. And I'm one, by the way.
We are not, but it is true that, you know, children can learn our strategy and use it. Students, people in the community, no matter their literacy level, can learn our strategy and use it, as well as senior citizens. I have done a couple of presentations with senior citizens, and the results are the same. They
think
for themselves. They feel that they have agency. They feel that they have license to ask questions. But they become aware of the many decisions that affect them. And that's different, bringing them through a process than just telling them.
That's
it's
right.
Really good stuff. I mean, you two need to be commended. I'm commending you. You're getting a Larry Award today. You two need to be commended for this. That's not worth anything. It won't even get you a bus ride down to the city. But
we're going to put it on our wall of honor here. That's really nice, Larry. That's really nice. And I want to tell you that we feel that we, in a sense, we're kind of intermediaries, because this really profoundly important insight about the importance of learning to ask your own questions was named by people who have never really been respected for what they can add to the conversation about how to make education work better, how to make democracy work better. So the source of our insight came from the parents with whom we were working, and what we feel that we're doing is we are working every day on how to make it easier and simpler for people to learn the strategy and share it with others. And what we have discovered along the way is how many people who really also recognize how important it is, but usually environments that are very kind of innovation, inquiry, industry, the private sector. Peter Drucker talked about how the problem with American business is not getting the right answers. It's not asking the right questions. Your pal, Stuart Firestein, looks at, you know, his graduate students who come in and says, you know, they look at a 1,400-page textbook and they think that's all that there is to know. And he says, no, that's simply all that we know. What we don't know is much greater. So students need to learn how to manage ignorance, how to ask questions. So we feel that's what we're trying to do.
It's like a young Frankenstein. It's not Firestein. It's Firestein.
Firestein.
The mighty Stuart Firestein. This is how I met Dan. Okay, the mighty Stuart Firestein is one of the world's leading neuroscientists, and he's a professor at Columbia and my oldest friend in the world.
He's a great guy.
And I think you were the one who asked me how far away did he live from you, okay, when you guys were growing up.
Right. Right.
Fill it up.
Right.
And my answer to you was, when I actually thought about it, there were five houses in between us, but it was the width of my current house.
Wow.
That's how
wow.
small the houses were.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Firestein, whose books
Firestein.
Are Ignorance and Failure, by the way. Ignorance, then the second book, Failure, and they're both yeah. wonderful. Stu Firestein.
Great, book.
Great. Did you read
great.
Them, Luz? Luz, did yeah. you read them?
Well, I'm very familiar with the book because Dan has been using it like a little Bible.
There you go.
He mentions us in his second book.
Yeah, I'll tell Stu. I have trouble calling him Stu. I have a nickname for him.
Yeah,
I'll tell him
yeah.
that you you now think he's the Buddha. Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
I'll send him
like
the show
that.
Too. So he can hear this and think
pretty,
you guys are
he's
doing.
He's a pretty neat guy.
He's a great guy. He's my brilliant and one of the funniest people I know in my entire life. And we're having dinner in December in New York together with the wives as well. When Carolyn and I get there, I love him. Then he loves
that's
me.
That's great.
And that's all.
That's great.
And that's all there. I do. There's not a day in our lives when we didn't know each other. Not a day
yeah.
in our lives when we didn't know each
yeah.
other.
That's
so
very cool.
And that's a lot of life, by the way. It goes back a long time now. So anyway,
good
this
people,
is great.
Good people, yeah, good people stay connected. We're very fortunate
yeah.
at the Right Question Institute to have a core group of people who have been working together for a long time, keeping our eyes on the prize for a long time.
Yeah, and what you're doing is right. It tells people how to get through a system. And our whole world is systems, and it's so darn important. I'll plug the book before we're done. We got to go. Luz, a pleasure. Dan, a pleasure. Okay, I'll tell Firestein you said hello, young Frankenstein. I'll tell him.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you
and
so
I'll make
much.
Sure everybody
great
knows about the show, and I'll send you a copy of it. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right,
you're welcome. Believe me, you're welcome.
Okay. Great.
Bye, Dan.
Take care.
Have a crack
bye-bye.
Up here. Okay. All right. Stan Rothstein and Luz Santana. They wrote Partnering with Parents to Ask the Right Questions from the Right Question Institute.org is their group. It's an ASCD book. They sent it out to their members. It's a powerful strategy for strengthening school family partnerships. Okay. So it's right. Let me get this right. Rightquestion.org and then of course right question. Yeah, rightquestion.org and then it's also ASCD.org, quite obviously. Thanks, Ross. And thanks, Dan, for making me laugh at the end. Okay. I wasn't going to bring up the mighty Firestein, but you did for me, so thank you. All right. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.